Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. In their new book, Fragile Democracy, professors Jim Lalutis of UNC Chapel Hill and Bob Korstad of Duke University tell the story of race and voting rights in North Carolina from the end of the Civil War to the present day. And sadly, as you can likely imagine, the picture they paint is often not a pretty one. Time and again, the ugly specter of white supremacy looms over the saga as entrenched white politicians continually invented new and creative schemes to keep people of color from gaining access to the ballot box and public office. And while much progress has been achieved over the last century and a half, the authors reminded me in a recent conversation that we still have a long way to go. Well, Professor Robert Korstad and James Lalutis, welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
The new book that you all have co-authored is entitled Fragile Democracy, The Struggle Over Race and Voting Rights in North Carolina. It's a fascinating read and an easily digestible one, I'll say, for people who may be lay people and not used to reading about politics and elections and voting rights in North Carolina. I heartily urge them to check it out. It's available at UNC Press. You can also find it at fragiledemocracy.com. Tell us about the book. How did this come about? Why now?
Well, Rob, you know, this book actually grew out of work that the two of us have done as expert witnesses in two federal lawsuits involving voting rights, race and voting rights in North Carolina. The first, of course, was the suit over House Bill 589. And I know listeners will remember that sweeping revision of North Carolina election law enacted by the Republican majority in the state legislature. And more recently, in an ongoing case, the pending federal lawsuit over Senate Bill 824, which would implement the recent constitutional amendment requiring voter photo ID. And, you know, as we were doing this work, it just seemed to us that it was important to share this story, not only in the courtroom, but for the people of North Carolina. That was the spirit in which we wrote this book. We think it stands up as a piece of scholarship, is at the same time, we hope, a broadly accessible book for a general engaged audience.
That was Professor Jim Lalutis. When I look at the book and read it, I'm struck by sort of just the relentless persistence of white supremacy and the white supremacy movement in our state. There's so many Americans, so many North Carolinians may think that it's merely a, you know, there was a moment, a bright line in which racism and white supremacy, at least as it was officially practiced by the state, went away at some point. But what's so striking is how it's just like a whack-a-mole. You can't seem to make it go away. It continues to rear its ugly head throughout the last century and a half, and you can draw almost a direct line between the racism that of slavery and enslavement of African-American people right down to the modern times.
Yeah, I think, Rob, when we started doing the research for this book, we were struck by the persistence of white supremacy in the state of North Carolina. We were also struck by the persistence of pushback against that and the struggle that African-Americans and their progressive white allies have made really beginning at the end of the Civil War to the present day. I think one of the important insights of this book is this understanding that this past has played out in a series of kind of cycles of emancipatory politics and conservative retrenchment. So we see in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War, freedmen and women and their white Republican allies really envisioning a democratic moment in North Carolina, an expansion of social welfare spending, ballots for all men, black and white. And that pushback comes very quickly in the aftermath of that with the Klan violence in the early 1870s. So one of the things that we are doing in this book is really looking at how that cycle of struggle has played out to this day. And there's, you know, no better example of that than the legislative agenda of conservatives starting in 2010. And then the pushback both from the courts and from protests in the state exemplified by the Moral Monday movement.
As I went through the book, there would be stories of individual initiative at the local level by African-American would-be politicians and activists and organizers, and they'd get their act together and get somebody elected or somebody on the ballot to run for city council. And then, lo and behold, the General Assembly would say, well, maybe we're going to change the rules in your city as to how we elect members of the city council so that it's not as easy for an African-American member to get elected. It's just, it's so blatant. And yet it just keeps happening again and again throughout the 20th century and right into the 21st century, that the linkages between the story of progress and then two steps forward, another step back, just keeps happening over and over.
Well, you know, one contemporary put it this way. He said, you know, the lesson's always the same. You beat the white man in one game and he tries another. And, you know, so we do see across time this invention and reinvention of white supremacy. I think it's important to understand that, that white supremacy is, in fact, something that has to be created anew each and every day, because there is nothing natural, right, about it. I think if you look at this history, you also begin to understand why North Carolina is such a purple state. You know, this state has been profoundly conservative at certain points in its time, remarkably, certainly in the southern context, remarkably progressive at other times. And those changes come about by moving often very, very small segments of the electorate one way or the other on the political spectrum. And that's where race figures in so centrally as a dividing force, as a means in some ways of ruling by guaranteeing that the sort of critics of white supremacy are themselves at odds and made fearful of one another.
Another fact that maybe a lot of folks aren't aware of, people who are perhaps new to the political process who haven't followed American history, is the transformation of the two political parties that took place during this last century and a half. Of course, the Republican Party, initially the party of Lincoln, the party of emancipation for Black Americans, and the Democratic Party for so long in the South was the party of white supremacy, avowedly so. That began to crack during the Roosevelt years, and eventually we've had almost a 180-degree flip-flop when it comes to this central matter.
I think that's a really interesting part of the story, is the way in which the party realignment that's taken place over the 150 years plays out. You know, because the Republicans of today are not the Republicans of 100 years ago. And I think it's one of the reasons why we've tried to focus less on partisanship and political parties and more on ideologies and worldview. So we really see this contest that's been going on over this period of time between two different perspectives about the role of government, the role of democracy in North Carolina. And so we've labeled this more progressive forces and conservative forces just as a way of identifying them. And sometimes those forces are in one political party, sometimes they're in others. I think in moments of transition, both parties may have some of the same people in them, and it takes a while for them to work out. So I think we're so fixated in this country on political parties and partisanship that we lose sight of the real political differences that underlay the battles that are going on.
We're coming near the end of our interview with Professor James Lalutis of UNC and Professor Bob Korstad of Duke University about their new book, Fragile Democracy, The Struggle Over Race and Voting Rights in North Carolina. But I want to ask you both about how you feel now. I mean, obviously, you both have a point of view. You're both in favor of progress in this realm and have done your best to document what seems to be painful, slow, but at least some gradual progress in our society. But we remain a very, as you put it, purple, divided state these days in North Carolina. Where do we go from here? What are your views on what the prospects are for additional progress, and how long is it going to take, by gosh?
Rob, you know, I would say on the whole, I'm actually relatively optimistic. You know, as you say, there's something disheartening about this long history. And yet, you know, an important part of the story, particularly the more contemporary part of the story, is we've seen a coordinated campaign to limit access to the ballot box and to limit the capacity of government, you know, as a means of investing in and supporting human flourishing. But that effort has in some ways been, in many ways, been stopped. It's really quite remarkable in this state in contemporary terms. Think of the Moral Monday movement. you know, the way people have managed to do what folks with a democratic ethos with a little d did many years ago, and that is to build alliances across the divisions of race and class and gender and so on, and put forward a vision of society and a vision of government that is responsible to each and every one of us, a government that serves the good of the whole. So I'm encouraged by that.
I would agree with Jim, and I also think that one of the interesting things in North Carolina is that we have a progressive infrastructure in the state through nonprofits, through citizens groups, through voting rights organizations that I think played a major role in turning the state for President Obama in 2008 and are back hard at work right now. And they're, you know, trying to bring in voters who haven't been involved in the political process, trying to engage them, have them understand the importance of their vote, and trying to facilitate them getting to the polls and having their voice heard in what is, you know, really one of the more meaningful elections in our country and our state's history.
The book is Fragile Democracy, The Struggle Over Race and Voting Rights in North Carolina. You can find it at fragiledemocracy.com. There's also an amazing digital exhibit worth checking out, as our professors have noted in our conversation before our interview. If you don't have the time to consume the entire book right away, you can spend some time exploring that digital exhibit and get a good sampling of what's in it. But I urge you strongly, do get a copy of the book and read it. You won't regret it. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I really appreciate this. I hope we get a chance to chat again sometime soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. Please wear your mask, stay safe as best you can. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.